Hello and welcome. You're listening to Queer Quirks on UMFM 101.5, which broadcasts from the University of Manitoba, located on Treaty 1 territory, the lands of the Anishinaabeg, Nehiyawak, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and the homeland of the Métis Nation. Now let's take a moment here to acknowledge that land acknowledgements do nothing to return that land to its rightful owners or to pursue justice on the basis of the past history of exploitation and degradation of Indigenous peoples within Canada. So if you haven't already and you can afford to, I strongly suggest that you make a recurring contribution to an Indigenous organization to make a concrete financial action towards pursuing the justice that should be our goal instead of acknowledgement. This is Queer Quirks, a queer talk and music show which examines news, history, culture, and current events through a queer lens. I'm your host, Lee Fraser, they, them, and I'm a PhD candidate in sociology at the University of Manitoba. But more importantly for the show, I have a long history of queerness and of advocacy and volunteerism in the queer community. The goals of the show are to showcase artists and creators who are part of minoritized genders and or sexualities, often referred to with initialisms like 2SLGBTQIA+. And I also discuss how events around the world affect queer communities because of how the world treats people who are minoritized genders and sexualities. Often this topic includes mistreatment and violence. I do my best to provide trigger warnings, and please let me know at queerquirks@gmail.com if you feel there's anything I'm missing. I also try to be balanced in my discussion of different groups, particularly if I'm not a member of that group. So wherever possible, I will direct you to further resources and readings or highlight people who are doing work from that perspective that I cannot provide with nuance and genuine understanding. I try to keep the show accessible, which means I rely on publicly accessible work where I can, and where I can't or where I want to highlight something that is not publicly accessible, I will work to provide interpretations and discussion to make it useful to people who have not pursued the particular career that I have. This last is very important because if you are someone who is, for example, bisexual, lesbian, trans, non-binary, if you are anyone who is a part of the groups that I talk about on this show, I believe that you're entitled to work that talks about your life experiences, and you're entitled to it in a form that's useful to you. So, if there is anything that I'm missing or anything that you want to comment on, I strongly encourage you to get in touch because I am always happy to hear about ways that I can understand the world better or work to make the show and what I do more useful and in some cases more entertaining.
Today I want to play some fun music because one of my favorite things about Pride season is having the opportunity to examine things that come out of publications like Autostraddle and bring up artists, musicians, businesses that you might not have seen before. And I do recommend that if you are at all interested in Pride and supporting and being an ally, that lots of people quite reasonably spend the prior month that we've just finished, Pride Month, getting a lot of rainbow stuff. Sometimes people, especially like parents or close friends or siblings, are really excited to celebrate and to be able to show off some sort of rainbow affiliation. And so one of the issues with that is what we call rainbow capitalism, which is basically that when you have businesses who are engaging in slapping a rainbow on products to show their quote-unquote support during Pride season, I've already spoken about how I don't think that that's often genuine support. Often what that is actually just sort of pandering for some sort of social status marker and some sort of queer money, perhaps. So a lot of it doesn't mark an actual commitment to the community. But also, more importantly, these are often big corporations. We don't necessarily need them to make more money. And a lot of the businesses that you see shilling Pride merchandise at different times of years are not necessarily engaging in like fair labor practices or supporting their queer trans employees or things like that. So it's an opportunity sometimes during this month to think, okay, if I'm going to spend money and I want to slap a rainbow on myself, which fair, totally support that urge. I always do it. You might want to look for smaller businesses that you can support. And so easy ways to do that can be things like going on Etsy and looking for things even within your province and within Canada, keeping it local. And there's often people who are making things like pronoun buttons or magnets or flags or paintings or things like that that can be not only kind of a cooler thing to show in your home or to show an affiliation to something that you love, but also give money often to small businesses and creators, and small businesses and creators that are queer. So I do look for people who may put it in their profile, for example, that they are part of the queer community, because one of the easy things that I like about supporting the queer community is that there's many gorgeous creatives and artists in the community. And in particular, if I'm going to buy Pride gear, I like to buy it from people who are part of the community so that my money goes back to us. It's a very nice exchange. It's a nice way of, you know, essentially contributing to the community and also getting something that you want, which is a product. Now, of course, that's not limited to the time of year that Pride's going on. Any time of year, there is something nice that you can do to support the queer community, and that is if you're buying something and that it can be provided by someone who's part of a marginalized group, then that is a really good way to show your allyship. So often we all have to buy things, and I can definitely understand if you are someone who's strapped for cash and it is cheaper or easier to buy from large businesses because they are forcing the world to be that way, and there's no ethical consumption under capitalism, and certainly you should never feel bad for not being able to do that kind of support. But if you're someone who, you know, does have the ability to make that choice, and there is a product that is made by a company that maybe more openly affirms the community as well, has shown genuine support for their employees or spokespeople, and has kind of good reviews from people who are part of that community, that can be a good choice. Or if you have a company that is owned by queer people, or I always believe in supporting small and local businesses wherever possible too, that also keeps your money local and means it's going back into the community. But realistically, there is nothing easier, in my opinion, in terms of if you want to donate or something but you don't have the extra cash, than simply looking for an alternative. So that might mean finding something that is relatively similar in price or accessibility that just happens to come from a queer creator, and that's not hard to do. Or if you are playing music or putting together a playlist, look for queer artists that you can introduce to a wider audience, even if it's just your circle of friends. So there's little things that you can always do that are useful. And especially if you are someone that the population that is targeting with ads or sees you as a good investment in their business. So if you are especially, say, someone who is well-established and regularly has disposable income, if you are buying on the basis of a business treating their queer employees with humanity, try to make that note. Talk about it. Talk about your reasons, because businesses aren't going to change because they genuinely like and care about us. That's not really how I or anyone else expects the world to work, given that human rights have never just calmly shown up and been given to people because they waited nicely or anything, or because businesses just decided to be better. But what they are pressured by is public opinion, and some of that comes into hollow changes, like when we see rainbows slapped on all of these logos during Pride Month from businesses that have often been exposed for hypocrisy during that same month for mistreating their trans or queer employees. But sometimes demand that is based on this type of change can help to create better circumstances, say, for queer workers. So if people that are seen as having social, economic, and political power, so especially people who are moms and dads of queer adults, you belong to a generation that has a lot of sway in how things are marketed and how businesses go. I know young people have a lot of buying power, but honestly, a lot of the people who are holding the power within the businesses or managing or making decisions within them are more in an older age bracket. if you're making it known that you are choosing things on the basis of whether they are following through on commitments of allyship to the queer community, and I hesitate actually to call that allyship because it's just treating their employees with humanity if they are trans and queer, the same type of humanity that cisgender straight people get already, then you are making it known that that's something that you're going to look for and telling that business, hey, here's an easy way for you to potentially increase your revenue or give you a leg up over your competitor if you make these changes, because I and hopefully others like me will be looking for it and looking for genuine follow through. And so we will get some changes that are just virtue signaling, which is a term that refers to when businesses are just making changes, or organizations or governments, anyone, are making changes to be like, look at me, look at me, look how great I am, and not for the actual good of the people. Or you can see this also even in individuals where someone is doing something quote unquote good for how it reflects on them and the attention that it gets them, rather than for the genuine good of the outcome. That being said, when people engage in virtue signaling, if someone wants to make a donation and it's less about caring about the population it goes to and more about showing off a big check they're giving, that check still goes to that organization. That's great. So this is the type of public pressure and ally pressure that can be really useful. And again, what I talk about on the show and any communities that I talk about, we're minorities. So as we've mentioned, our rights are never safe. We will never, on the basis of majority vote, be able to protect ourselves as a community. That's simply not how it works. The word minority tells you all of that problem. So what we need for changes to happen is for other people to show that it also matters to them. And this applies to other groups too, of course, like white folks need to show, as a large majority in this country, and certainly as the group that holds the most social, economic, and political power, that we care about the changes that are affecting people of color in this country because of the fact that we are the large group that can effect change. And I mean, the other part of that is that it shouldn't be on the affected group to create that change, but also that if we're talking about a group that is a minority or is significantly disadvantaged in one of those avenues to power, or all of those avenues to power, social, economic, and political, then they will not be listened to in making that change. And so if you're someone that will be listened to, you can use that to be like, hey, I know that you thought you could ignore the needs of, say, the queer community because there's a small amount of them. It doesn't really matter if they want to stop buying from you. But guess what? The rest of us are also feeling that way. So maybe you should make a change. So that can be a really, really useful way to leverage what you know and your beliefs, and to say, in terms of the things that genuinely are reflected in the choices of businesses and organizations and governments, my vote or my money or my investment is going to go with these principles. So if you want my money, if you want my time, if you want my interest, you have to make a change and start treating these groups like human beings. So that's a really useful thing you can do. And guess what? It doesn't even cost money. If you're looking at just like alternatives, like can I buy from a queer organization? Or if you're just highlighting or calling out hypocrisy, being like, hey, we see you putting a rainbow on your logo, but we also see you violating the human rights of your queer employees. That's an easy way to actually do something. And even if it just goes within your social group, even if you are just sharing this information or talking about it with other people, the more people who are not members of our group show that they are talking and caring about our issues, the more other people in that social circle are going to say, oh, if I engage in, or in some cases continue to engage in, discrimination against this group, or if I continue just not caring and ignoring the abuses against them, potentially someone that I socially value is going to see a problem with that. So that also matters, because often the people who want to deny us our rights don't really care what we think of them, and they're not really surprised that we don't like them. But if someone who they see as their contemporary, someone who is a peer and a member of their group, sees a problem with things, then they might be more likely to listen to that. And if you hear little footsteps and water drinking, that is my two dogs, because I am still recording at home during this time. And of course, my animals choose the time that I am recording as the primary time to make noises. They have been sleeping all afternoon, but once I put on a microphone, they've just got to make all of their little movements that make jingles and noises and cause problems. So I am going to play some music today, and I do want to talk about a good moment I had watching a TV show the other day and a moment of allyship. but I was struck recently by the fun of some songs that highlight a particular issue that can happen within the queer community, which is, say, having feelings for someone that you consider your friend. And I think that I find this really interesting because for me, it's not something that I have in particular had. Like, I have friends in the queer community, and I have straight friends, and certainly there is a trope of, say, a queer person falling in love with a straight person or falling for a straight friend early on. And I had a conversation with someone else queer the other day about how I've just not happened to have that experience. So that's something that I find really interesting to me, because it's a situation where I guess the people I've dated have been acquaintances or friends in a way, but I've never had that issue of feelings for a close friend and struggling with that or not having them be reciprocated by someone who doesn't have that orientation. And I think it's interesting too, because we don't often see parallels drawn between some of these tropes, but there certainly is a similarity between people who have feelings for someone who is a close friend and struggle with unrequited love, and the trope of queer folks having feelings for a straight friend or having feelings for a friend in a couple of these songs that I'm going to play for you that maybe they do want to act on. And so I think it's really interesting because it's an area of commonality to different communities. Certainly there is things like Taylor Swift, You Belong With Me, and there's plenty of songs about, you know, wanting someone to be with you instead of their boyfriend, or being their friend and feeling ignored or feeling like they don't see you that way. And there's a little bit of an added level when it's a queer person, of course, because maybe you belong to a group that you know that that person in their orientation doesn't feel that way. And while there might be a tiny bit of hope, there is sexual fluidity. Oftentimes people are aware, hey, I have feelings for this friend and I know they're solidly straight, or in some cases, I know that they are gay, and that's something that they're not interested in people of my gender, and so it's not going to happen. And so I think it's really neat because it is such a common and talked about experience that I see in other queer people, is that kind of early experience of falling in love with usually a same gender friend. So I guess kind of falling for someone in a context where it might seem unexpected, but it is really shared within a lot of unrequited loves in the straight community. And so I find that concept really interesting, and happened across a couple of songs which focus on that, on wanting to be more than friends, especially between women. And I really like those because I think the intimacy between women or people who are socialized as girls and women is very different than the intimacy that's encouraged between boys and men. And so we will often see people exploring how they feel romantically about people of their own gender by identifying it in someone who's close to them, while they're in an environment where intimacy and affection and closeness is encouraged and allowed, but the struggle is that that intimacy is not in a romantic or sexual way, and identifying how that is different within you from other people. Now, for myself too, I've always been really lucky in having a close group of queer friends where a lot of intimacy and casual affection is more common too. And I don't know if that's something that is common to, say, other marginalized communities. I haven't necessarily seen anything that suggests that that is specific to that. But I think because queer folks are aware of the different directions that intimacy can come from, and the fact that platonic intimacy, you know, the spaces that they have been expected to maintain or only have openness to platonic intimacy have not always been that for them, or that sometimes, unfortunately, people who are minoritized genders and sexualities often find that they don't have platonic intimacy from straight people who might be uncomfortable with them because of their orientation, or cisgender people who might be uncomfortable with them because of their gender. When you have friends or social groups that kind of lack that understanding, or simply if you have a larger social group that doesn't happen to express in that way, certainly I was pleasantly surprised to find articles talking about queer intimacy in general, in a different sense in that way, because I happen to have that with my own group of close friends. And I think that that's something really magical about that community. And I always sort of assumed that it came from a greater reliance on each other for understanding and perspective that we couldn't necessarily get from our respective families. So I've talked before about how queer people and trans people are born into families that don't share their characteristics. So it's not similar to, say, if you are experiencing marginalization because of your religion and you come from a deeply committed or religious family who has also faced that type of discrimination and can help show you how to navigate it. In this case, you are going to people who are your peers, people who are your friends. And of course, too, because queer communities can be sort of small and have a lot of crossover in terms of people who have dated and then maintained friendships, we don't have necessarily the luxury of having the broad dating pool of not having our friendships and intimacies cross over with each other. So maybe that means that we approach intimacy in a different way. But whatever it is, I'm thankful for it. It's one of the very special things about being a queer person. And one of the things that I greatly enjoy personally, I love having that in my own life. I love being able to be close and affectionate and caring with my friends and to be able to have that sort of emotional and social support and physical support and intimacy in a lot of ways, the cuddling and the hugging and the care that, you know, can be really valuable as well if you're feeling exclusion from a larger community or just facing life day to day. So I really hope that all of us will have more of that intimacy and more of that affection and more of that value and love in our social circles and our friendships and other aspects of closeness outside of romantic, but it does seem to be strongly situated in the queer community, and maybe that's one of the things that can be further shared and encouraged in terms of how intimacy plays out, you know, in mixed gender groups and in groups of people who have mixtures of other characteristics. Hopefully we can see that kind of care and understanding in other spaces. I certainly hope that a lot of my friends and a lot of people, because straight people make up most of the world and cisgender people make up the world, I hope that those are also people who have that type of intimacy and closeness and care. But perhaps because queer folks are also less invested in some of the separations, the artificial separations we sometimes see imposed in groups based on gender, such as the idea that, you know, quote-unquote opposite gender people, so people who are identifying as men and people who are identifying as women, cannot have affection or closeness without it being romantic or sexual, or the idea that you can't have closeness and affection between, say, men. Some of that is done away with in the queer community because, of course, we know very well that you can be affectionate and close with a person of different genders and have it not be sexual or romantic. And also we know that you can have it be sexual and romantic with a person of your same gender or of different genders or all sorts of varieties. So we know that those lines are not strict, black and white and discrete as other communities may claim. So maybe that gives us more freedom to set boundaries on the basis more of what we expect or accept from each other and the kinds of soft affection that we might be open to, and the fact that it doesn't have to mean something that can be confined to a certain type of relationship, such as romantic, or be confined to a certain type of shared identity, such as a shared gender. So, wow, I actually had way more thoughts on that than I realized. So that's really interesting. Having gotten all that out of my head, I am going to play a song, and this is on the theme I talked about around friendship and people pining after someone who is their close friend or wanting more from that, and a couple of specifically queer songs around that. This one is Jenny, I Want to Ruin Our Friendship. The song originally by Studio Killers, and this is a cover by Kim Petras. And honestly, it's kind of a weird, if you know anything about Studio Killers, it's kind of a weird project and band and things like that. But I love the lyrics, I love the storytelling in this song, and so of course I love it being covered by Kim Petras. So here it is.
I'm here.
So that was Jenny, covered by Kim Petras. And I also wanted to play, in the vein of songs that have gotten popular on TikTok and things like that. This is another song that I think is delightful and should be known for more than just the fun of the TikTok clip. And that's Guy.exe by Superfruit. So here it is. Nice car, a CEO, and almost just as smart as me. Where are the boys that with financial security? A doctor, a model, a man of possibility. They say expectations are too high, and you'll never find a guy like that. It's driving you mad, honey. They say that it's just a waste of time. Get your head out of the sky, but I could synthesize a picture perfect. Why, oh why, oh why? 6 feet tall and super strong, we always get along. Alright, alright. Ooh, it hit me out of the heat, and not a minute late, 'cause I don't like to wait, no. Kind, and ain't afraid to cry, or treat his mama. So I have to say that song strikes me as queer in more than one way, just because the most memorable use of it in TikTok that I've seen is this gorgeous butch lady that I follow who did that transition shot and just was all muscles. And if you are at all familiar with the women loving women community, Sapik community, we are interested in muscular ladies. So it is a big thing. And so that always strikes me as particularly associated with that queer moment. But I have another song on the topic of people being in love with someone who's a friend. And so I'm going to play you Girly More Than a Friend.
I met her when I was explode. Her lipstick was blood red. She wore her hair messed up. She was my best friend when I had a boyfriend. But she was on my mind when I was in his bed. So we kept in touch because I wanted to touch her. I got kind of drunk and told her that I liked her. She said, "You're the best. This girl has got me all messed up."
So that was another really lovely song about falling for someone who is your best friend or is a good friend. And I think that again, is something that is relatable to people who are not queer, judging by the number of songs that there are on the basis of falling for someone who's your best friend. So I just happen to really enjoy coming across these particular very queer ones. And that's something that's really a fun moment too, I think, for some of the aesthetic and some of the cute lyrics and some of the people who are able to kind of put into words something that seems to be a coming of age struggle for a lot of queer folks. And so that's something that is a really interesting experience too, and maybe more common too. I was thinking of why in particular it's not something that was part of my experience of coming to queerness, and maybe that's partly too people realizing their identity younger, or when they're not in, you know, spaces where they're explicitly dating, or just, you know, the people you happen across as your friends. And I love and adore my friends, and I have dated within like a broad friend group, but I've never had the experience of falling for someone who is a close friend in that way. And honestly, I think that lends itself to very beautiful music too. So there's something that is absolutely wonderful about lyrics on this. And I think that there's certainly more than just queer artists exploring it. And so it's a very human experience and something that that makes for beautiful music. Now, another song that I want to share that I've been listening to is Space Girl by Francis Forever. And I have to say, I was immediately drawn to this song by Francis in a TikTok about it, describing it as their song that they wrote, in part being, you know, given some beautiful chords by a friend and then wanting to base music around that. But after seeing a really hot woman on Star Trek, That is a beautiful queer nerd experience. So here's Space Girl by Francis Forever.
So that was Francis Forever with Space Girl. And there's definitely a lot of songs that I really enjoy that just explore very cute themes and nerdy themes. And I'm so excited to live in a period of time of music where we have access to a lot more creativity that doesn't have to necessarily get to the point of being backed by like a large studio or something like that to come out and reach an audience. And it's very cool. And also, I mean, I don't even take full advantage of that because I am older than the generation of people who fully, I think, engage with a lot of social media and online platforms where a lot of this music comes out. So I'm like just the barest appreciator of that. So I did want to talk about, for me, a couple of things that I've encountered in TV shows recently that I really enjoyed. And so there's certainly a lot more to me in Pride Month about exploring and appreciating parts of my queer identity rather than necessarily joining in large-scale celebrations or things where I might be surrounded more by allies or corporations rather than the community. So I have enjoyed just appreciating and sharing experiences of queer media with some of my friends who are part of the community, and especially the absolute pleasure we take in a beautifully crafted relationship, for example, on screen, that just normalizes in a lot of ways the adolescent experiences of crushes or falling in love in a queer context, and the queer community hasn't had lots of that, so we're real excited when we get it. And so I did finally watch Heartstoppers, and I am very excited for the next season to come out, and I am absolutely delighted by the portrayal and the opportunity to see such a beautiful, sweet perspective on bisexuality was really cool for me. And I didn't realize as a bisexual person how much I felt like I needed and appreciated bisexual representation as opposed to the many times that we see sort of straightforward people coming to terms with being attracted to the same gender, not struggling with the experience of, oh, I'm attracted to multiple genders, or what does this mean in the sense of if I still have this part of my orientation that corresponds to, say, the larger group and some of the kind of decisions around that. And so that's something that I think is really beautiful to see in a TV show. It's really exciting because of the fact that I haven't encountered that many explorations of bisexuality in a really young person, and I think we don't see many bisexual young men characters, so that's also really gorgeous. And of course, just the style of the series and the cute little relationships between people like Tara Jones and her girlfriend are so sweet. So, I mean, spoilers, obviously, if you you're someone who hasn't seen this yet, I could have started with that. But of course, this is something that came out in April. If you're a queer person who really, really, really wants to see it, probably you have seen it and you know, for example, that Tara and Darcy are in a relationship. But I really enjoy it too for the nuance and the characters. Obviously, the character Charlie is struggling with having been outed or having relationships kind of hidden or all the difficulties around that. And I think the show explores some of the nuance in that really well about having a relationship sort of be hidden and treated as shameful versus someone maybe navigating not being ready to come out. And also someone just coming to terms with their attraction to a particular person in a really sweet way. So for some people, their experience, say, for example, bisexuality might not be, oh, I'm coming to recognize that I am attracted to, say, broadly women and men, and I respond to people in both those groups. But for some people, because bisexuality is a huge variation and there's a lot of different identities around it, there are people for whom it's being struck by one particular person that you're attracted to who happens to be of the same gender, or vice versa, being attracted to one particular person, opposite gender, something that was explored really well in a book I talked about on the show before, Ramona Blue. So that's something that I love seeing nuance and depth added to, and I personally really love this show in particular because they actually have teenagers portraying teenagers, and that's really noticeable. Like, it lends a lot to the show, and all of these teens are
incredibly talented actors, but also the fact is that teenagers look a certain way and are awkward and have, you know, breakouts and things like that. And adult actors who are in their 20s who are portraying teenagers don't, and often bring glamour and maturity to teen portrayals, or simply set up an expectation in some ways of what, you know, teen people might look like. And we're all aware that TV is not reality, but of course, when we consistently see people in their 20s portrayed as teens, it's weird. And I think there's something great about having actual teenagers in this. I think it's really bringing a lot of that tenderness and awkwardness and gentle early relationship feelings to it. And so Heartstopper is something that I can't wait to see more of, and I'm really delighted by. And I think that in the portrayals that we see, there must have been a lot of consultation with other people. I think there must have been people asking questions of these communities. I don't know with many of these young actors how they identify or whether they're parts of those communities. And also by having teenagers portraying them, you also might have people who are still exploring and coming to terms with that, or that, you know, of course, we're simply not entitled to their identity. And that's incredibly even more important when we're looking at teen actors versus, you know, anyone in the public eye for whom we're not entitled to their orientation. And certainly with young people, I think it's especially important to not be prying into their lives. But certainly they all portray the characters, I think, with beautiful nuance. And of course, there's also clearly some consultation with different communities. I think absolutely had to be here for this to ring as authentically as it does for someone like me, at least. And also just in terms of relationship moments that will hit home for a lot of people, the kind of gentleness and tenderness of a relationship developing between Nick and Charlie, and the really sweet moments that you can have with someone that you care about as you're coming to struggle to express your feelings romantically, and all of the joy that you get from having someone who wants to be your boyfriend and wants to be open about it and is making that choice to you know, to be with you, and especially at a young age, or if you've experienced really heartbreaking moments of not having a partner who's necessarily proud of being with you, then that all is so powerful and so well done. There's also, of course, a trans character whose transness or transition is not made the point of the show and who is played by a trans actress. So Yasmin Finney is obviously talented in multiple ways, and I'm sure based on just literally her appearance in this one show, must be a model or has an enormous future as a model, because she's gorgeous and tall and delicate and fashionable and all those things that I don't associate with teenagerhood, but I'm really I'm impressed to see it in some of these young people. And so her portrayal of Elle is really sweet and gorgeous, and having her embedded in a group of supportive friends, not having this be the kind of voyeuristic person experiencing bullying and trauma, is really good. There is some elements of that, and I think, of course, that's true to form, and especially true of a show following a relationship between two young men, that, of course, there's a lot of toxic masculinity and homophobia, but having characters talk about it and name it and be open about allyship and things like that is so valuable. Having male characters who are interacting with each other in platonic ways and being open about loving each other is also so valuable. So having men who are talking about their friendship and how important that is to them, and having, you know, physical support and affection for each other, that is groundbreaking portrayal to me. Certainly I can't claim to be someone who watches tons of TV, so maybe there are other representations like this, but certainly I found that wonderful and beautiful, and very much touched on the thing I talked about earlier, which was the element of having affection and support and genuine love between friends. And I think for a lot of men, that's very difficult to break touch boundaries and have physical affection, or to say that you value your friend or that you love them or that you want to spend time with them or that you feel jealous when they're in a romantic relationship without having to say things like, no homo. And that is really beautifully done here. So in the show, of course, Tao expresses jealousy and concern over
his friends moving away from him, especially towards romantic relationships. And it's never presented with that sort of often seen anxiety of like, oh, but I have to make sure that my friend knows I'm not romantically interested in him. The confidence between these young men as friends is gorgeous and beautiful. And there's a lot of awkward and messy conversations because it's a show about teenagers. But the fact that they're having the conversations and they have characters talking about it is phenomenal. And I think shows communication skills that many people as adults struggle with. And having those be valued and seen as useful, even though they don't solve everything, but seen as useful in expressing and avoiding misunderstandings or navigating relationships. This is all just a gorgeous mixture of storytelling and of relationships and of genuine reflections of queer identities. And it's so fun to see. And of course, it brings up some of the interesting things too that I think are cute and fun to challenge, which is like when you are someone who has a touch comfortable relationship with your friends, such as that between Tao and Elle, and really their whole friend group, you can't use a measure of, you know, if someone wants to snuggle up with you for a movie night or leans or on or hugs you, like that would be taken as a signifier of affection, usually automatically between opposite gender people. And so that's something that I think is a challenge for opposite gender folks having comfortable platonic friendships in a lot of spaces, because certainly it's seen as a signifier of, oh, this person likes you romantically or is attracted to you. If, say, a girl or a woman is very touchy or leans on or hugs a lot a friend who's a man or a boy, but of course it doesn't have to be. And when you have a friend group, as this one does, that includes people of romantic attractions to their own gender, as well as people who have romantic attractions to maybe more than one gender. Some of the characters' real identities are really not disclosed or explored, but certainly we know that these are young people who are aware of 2SLGBTQIA identities. And so the fact that they have a clear expression of platonic affection and an acknowledgement that affection, physical affection, and emotional connectedness between friends isn't something that is forbidden, or conversely, that it doesn't have to signify a romantic relationship or interest in a romantic relationship, also sets up an adorable moment in being friends and having that genuine attraction and nobody acknowledging it. And certainly, of course, you can't use that sort of subtle signifier that you might in a friend group that was more rigidly conforming to gendered roles. You couldn't use that as a sort of flirtatious signal or a sign that you're interested in someone, because you have a group where you're aware that affection and physical touch doesn't necessarily mean romance. So I thought that was a really cute problem to come up, because of course I fall into the trap of that when I see the two opposite gender characters connecting and being physically affectionate with each other on a social evening. And I was like, oh, they like each other. And I mean, they do. And hopefully the second season will explore that. But that it was a really good moment for me to confront the fact that I have been, you know, as everyone has been, raised in a society where we look at these things as this form of affection must mean romantic attraction. And so as you see those characters progress in how they talk to other people about their feelings for each other, and it's very clear that they do have feelings towards each other, it was really interesting to examine and be aware of the fact that, no, that doesn't mean that that was a romantic attraction. It is there, does happen to be there. But of course, since you see those characters also being physically affectionate and comfortable with other people, it doesn't have to mean that. And so that is a really interesting thing that I think kind of complements well the themes in the show of open communication and honesty. And of course, that doesn't mean clarity and never having confusion, because again, this is teenagers, and also this is life, and these are all complex relationships and attachments and attractions that they're all exploring. But having it have to be openly communicated or talked about or acknowledged if you're interested in someone, rather than relying on these signals, which really aren't that reliable to begin with, is so valuable for a show like that. So that is what I wanted to talk about with this show. on this particular occasion, but of course I have lots more things to say about characters I've encountered in different shows, especially without having their identities, say, be the sole focus of their character. So I am excited to see the next season of this one. And if you have recommendations that you would like to share for a show, please do tell me. I am always interested in exploring more queer media, though of course, like many people who are doing graduate work, I have very limited time, so I do have to confront that in myself. But I would say that I am definitely right now extremely appreciative of the more genuine representation that I'm seeing and the adorable, sweet moments that we're getting to see normalized between people of all different genders. So if you are someone who's interested in watching Heartstopper, then you might notice that some of the early moments of the crush between Charlie and Nick, and say wanting to hold someone's hand or feeling attracted to them or recognizing in a moment that you are attracted to them or seeing that they're a person who's really important to you that you want to spend time with, those are all beautifully portrayed as just some of those gentle, wonderful feelings about being attracted to someone, especially someone who's already in your life in a different way, like a friend, and certainly are generalizable to high school experiences between people of all genders. So kudos to them for doing a real good job on that. And that's it for me for today, and I will be back next Monday.